Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Time, as I was saying, for our Friday gathering. This week I'm joined by Fine Gael TD for Dunleary, Barry Ward, Labour TD for Dublin Central, Marie Sherlock, political reporter for the Irish Independent, Tabitha Monaghan, and political editor with the journal.ie, Christina Finn. Good morning, everybody. How are you all? Marie, can I start with you first and this suggestion of the loosening of planning regulations to allow the building of houses at the bottom of people's garden. Are your constituents in Dublin Central, who would be lucky enough to have gardens big enough to accommodate that, are they going to welcome the freedom to house members of their family in the bottom of their gardens, or do you think that they're more likely to end up rolling out the red carpet to Airbnb guests as soon as it's built?
Well, I think, Philip, the first thing to say is that I've come across quite a number of households where, you know, we have three generations in households or adult children that can't move out. And out of sheer desperation, they've ended up constructing kind of, you know, cabins at the bottom of their parents' garden. And bear in mind, Dublin Central is the most densely populated constituency in the country. So the gardens, by and large, are smaller than maybe elsewhere. But ultimately, it is out of sheer desperation that people have done this. And I suppose this government announcement of a consultation now, to my mind, is a complete gimmick. I don't think anybody wants to live at the back of the garden. But what it is going to do, though, is it's going to increase property prices in the area, because all of a sudden now, houses are going to be deemed to have the potential for an additional bedroom, you know, in whatever postage stamp of a garden that they have. So to my mind, it's completely wrong what the government are doing. It's a deflection from their own failures. And, like, you know, right now, there isn't a single penny in Dublin City Council for tenant in situ, not a single penny to buy a derelict house, not a single penny for an older person to sell their house back to the councils so they can move to something smaller and more appropriate. And this consultation process is a complete nonsense. Right. The reality is that the state government needs to build houses, either through the LDA and also local authorities as well.
They can, of course, be used for Airbnb, but they can end up adding to the value of a property, Barry Ward. So the unintended consequence here might be that you've just further pushed property prices up as a consequence.
Well, the first thing is that nobody's suggesting this is the solution to the housing crisis. What it is part of a suite of measures that people like John Cummins have been bringing forward to offer people options and give flexibility to people. It's also going to free up time in local authorities in terms of planning decisions. There isn't a requirement now to go for planning for things like this. So let's actually look at this as what it is. It's an opportunity for people who want to avail of this opportunity to give them flexibility to do something that might suit their living arrangements. But it's not a solution. It's not a panacea. It's about flexibility, and that's what it really is. As you quite correctly point out, Philip, you can't use this for Airbnb. So in terms of how it might actually increase property prices, I mean, any more than an extension, I don't understand how that argument holds water. If you built an extension onto your house, that might increase the value of your house because your house has more options to it. But there's never a contemplation in this scheme that you create two separate dwellings, okay, for example.
And are you confident that we don't end up 30 years down the line with crumbling, festering piles at the bottom of people's gardens that aren't sufficient or fit to house anybody?
Yeah, well, they all have to comply with normal building regulations. They have to have water provision and all the other things you do. If you were building an extension and you were getting planning permission, all the same rules apply to them. But what you're talking about really is a measure that is going to alleviate the pressure. And I'm interested in hearing what Marie says about three generations living in one house. It may well suit that family to have one of those generations in a space that is separate from the main house. That might take some of the pressure off them. We're not suggesting it's a long-term solution or it's going to solve all the problems, but it does give them flexibility.
Tabitha, you've been reporting this week that this all might be kind of moot because who's going to build them?
Well, exactly. And I think one of the reasons that people have really grasped onto this issue is because we see the government not meeting its housing targets, and that, you know, being able to construct a modular home in the back and just land it in there is more straightforward, I think. But yeah, as you referenced, there is this idea. Well, there was a report published by Minister Jack Chambers in the Department of Public Expenditure, and it outlined 12 barriers to the delivery of infrastructure. Part of that would be housing as well, but obviously also water, electricity and transport. One of those 12 barriers was that there's a capacity constraint within the construction sector and also a productivity issue as well. Now, that was the finding of the report. It was saying that I think on average per year there was between 2,400 and 4,900 construction workers leaving the country every year. to counteract that, of the work permits that are being issued, I think in 2024 there was about 39,000 of them, something like 2,000 were for construction workers. So it's not balancing out there.
Given the robustness of that evidence, were you surprised to see the Construction Industry Federation say, no, there isn't a shortage?
I think that's an understatement of how surprised that I was. I was actually a bit confused, because it was outlined black and white in that report that this is an issue and that is one of the things that we're going to have to counteract. Now, it was one of 12, and the emphasis very much in that report was the issue of judicial reviews and how that is an increasing threat in the delivery of infrastructure. But yeah, the Construction Industry Federation were emphatic. There is not a labour shortage in the industry. Not only is there not a labour shortage, but actually the argument put forward to me was that the businesses aren't able to sustain themselves in this country and instead have had to go abroad to seek work. So Paul Sheridan, who I spoke to from CIF, said every time the government comes out and says there is a capacity issue in the sector, he has his members ringing him up from London saying, well, why am I here? There's a reason I'm here, because I'm looking for work abroad. So it's trying to find what exactly is the issue there, because as you said, we saw this release of the National Development Plan, the review of that, billions of euro is going to be put into infrastructure. Is there an issue in construction? I think it's kind of remains to be seen right now.
And there's another aspect of this, right? So we know, let's say, with regards to construction apprentices, they've been telling us now for a number of years that because of the rates of pay, that it's really difficult for them to stay in the sector. 2 years ago, then Minister for Further Education Simon Harris promised that there would actually be every construction apprentice would get at a minimum the minimum wage, right? We're not talking about large amounts of money here, and the government have completely reneged on that promise. And when we talked about a state construction company to try and ensure that you have people working on a full-time basis in construction and the development of public housing in this country, like, we were sneered at by the Taoiseach of this country. So there is a capacity issue, but there's been a failure to engage with the solutions that have been put forward as well, making sure that we have a strong pipeline of apprentices, making sure that people actually have regular employment, because the reality in construction is that you move from project to project, and for some people that instability and that insecurity is too much. So we need to change how we build houses in Ireland.
Christina Finn, back to the granny flats for a second, the granny flats in the garden. If the former housing minister Owen Murphy had suggested this back in 2017, how do you think it would have been greeted then?
I think he would have been laughed at and probably ridiculed, over 10 years ago if this had been put forward, because there was a lot of ideas like the co-living idea, which had came down for severe criticism. And now at this point, it feels almost like people are so desperate that they're willing to sort of accept.
All that has to happen is for an idea to hang around long enough before it ends up being adopted.
Yeah, because there's, like, in fairness from his book, he said that he came up against a lot of difficulty trying to put forward some ideas such perhaps as this, or the Housing Activation Office was also something that's kind of been floating around the ether for, the guts of a decade. And now we're seeing that, we have a promotion now of small apartment sizes. This is going to be coming down the line. And I think over about 10 years ago, there was really harsh criticism when some of these ideas were coming forward from the government, because people were saying there has to be another solution here. But I think because the years have dragged on and nothing has really improved, I think people are just kind of happy to take any sort of out of the box thinking as some sort of solution or help, because things have just gradually gotten worse over the last 5 to 10 years. And I think it's actually kind of surprising how the framing of the shed in the back garden, I don't think it's going to be that. I think it will, that the push is to have these sort of modular homes. I've seen them myself. They look, quite large. In some degrees, you could stay in them for a year or two, but it's not a permanent solution for where people want to live. And I think that this is really impacting people's lives. Like, people are putting off having children, they're putting off getting married, they're putting off those key milestones in life because of the housing situation. And look, it's interesting to see that people are kind of broadly accepting of it, I think, just because they're kind of like, look, we'll take anything at this point.
Barry Ward, don't you have to congratulate Christina on her creative use of English language and the number of ways that she managed to say things have not improved, things have gradually got worse, and so on and so on. This is just intractable.
But nobody's suggesting that this is a long-term solution. What this is it's something that will suit some people. And what it is the government giving flexibility to those people to use what solutions work for them in the short term. there's no suggestion that people are going to move into long-term living at the end of the garden. That's not what this is about. But at the moment, if you want to construct something in your garden to facilitate somebody, you've got to go through planning. That creates pressure on the planning system within the local authority. It creates a cost for the householder, and then it creates other problems. And what Minister John Cummins has done with this proposal, and it's gone out to public consultation, notwithstanding Marie's kind of doubts about that, the whole idea is to hear what people have to say about it. But it's part of a suite of measures. And those measures, by the way, are not just, this is the one people focus on. And you've referred to them as granny flats, something that were removed by a Labour minister, I have to say. They were outlawed by a Labour minister. But it's part of a whole suite of other measures being put in place to reduce pressure on systems, in particular pinch points. It's not the solution to all our problems, and it's not a long-term solution.
Unfortunately, you know, we're into this new government. During the election, we were told housing is the number one priority. Mm-hmm. It's the key focus for this government. And the ideas that we've seen over the last 6 months come out from, in terms of tackling the housing crisis, are smaller apartment sizes and log cabins and back gardens. Mm-hmm. And there's no sight of the Housing for All 2.0 plan. It was meant to be out before the summer. I think people are holding back on making decisions on that. And they're the only ideas that have been floated.
Let's move on here a bit. 300,000 households in electricity arrears, as we just found out yesterday. How does it make you feel about politics and covering politics, Tabitha Monaghan, when universal supports are a good idea before the election and they're not such a good idea after the election?
Yeah, I think when you make that point, and the opposition has continually made that point, particularly in the last few weeks of this Dáil, you know, during leaders' questions, that has been the argument that the opposition has put forward. And you can see that they might have a really good point there, because they're at one point, This was something that was beneficial to the government, that they were heading into an election, they were going to have to face the electorate, and that they needed to help them out. And that hasn't changed. We've heard Dara O'Brien saying yesterday there will not be energy credits in this budget, that any of the measures that will be brought in place, they will need to be targeted, and that they're going to be part of the mainstream measures that are going to be introduced in Budget 2026 in October. So yeah, I think there is an argument to be made there that there is some questionable timeline in relation to this, but also that the situation hasn't changed. But also we have to consider the fact that the trade environment, the international environment has changed as well. So difficult decisions are going to be made.
Barry Ward, you pulled an old-fashioned, cynical and ultimately very expensive stroke to win that election.
Not at all. I must say I don't share Tabitha's clarity on what the opposition is saying on this, because they were critical of the universal supports that were brought in by the government last year, and they're now suggesting they should be brought in, they're criticising the government for suggesting there would be more targeted supports.
Can you deal with my question?
Yeah, the big difference.
You bought the election, you bought popularity.
But the big difference between targeted and universal supports is universal supports are fast, but they're cumbersome and they don't address the need where it is. The big advantage of them is that you can put them in place straight away and you don't have to spend time putting in place
well,
a minute
no,
system.
Hang on a second. And the big advantage of them is that you don't have to draw a line somewhere and say everybody below that line of 80 or 90,000 household income deserves our support, but nobody above it deserves our support. That's the kind of thing that makes governments very unpopular.
No,
and that's why you didn't take decision.
If you look at why those supports came in, it was because of a war that created a spike in energy prices particularly. Inflation was up to 10%. It's now down to 1.4%. But the idea was there had to be a rapid response to people who really needed support with things like energy. If you spend time putting
it, hang on
a second,
Barry.
Philip. Yeah, you could have drawn a line, Philip, but that takes time and administrative support. So you've got to pick that line, and it's arbitrary. And of course, you're absolutely right. There'll be people who'll be just the wrong side of that line who lose out. But that's not really the point. The point is now you've got to put in an administrative process to decide which side of the line you have to administer, who's going to get the support and who isn't. A universal support is quick. Now you're in a situation where the global financial situation is much more unstable. The government is absolutely right to be careful about what promises it's making at this stage in the budgetary process. There are lots of supports in the budget, and there will be lots of supports in the budget for all kinds of different measures for families for households.
That argument would make sense if it wasn't for the fact that you were putting in place universal supports for a year and a half before the general election.
No, the same applies in terms of putting them in place to make sure that they're there.
You said it had to be done urgently.
Yes, and it did. And you remember that the rate of inflation even in the last few years spiked, and it was a response to that. That inflation is now gone down to 1.4% to a large extent because of measures taken by the government. But let's be realistic about it. This is not an abandonment by the government of people, because the supports in the budget will be enormous. And we can talk about all the measures that have been put in place in terms of hot school meals in schools, the consolidation of social welfare rates. And there are other countries in Europe that don't have strong economies like ours who are talking about cutting social protection rates. None of us is in favour of that in government. So let's be realistic about what's actually happening.
Marie Sherlock, you're shaking your head there, but you love an old universal support in Labour, even though it's not the best way of spending money.
Well, we've been very clear, actually, that this had to be a targeted support. And you know, to Barry's point, this is an abandonment of people now, right? We've had 3 winters of a universal energy credit, 2.7 billion euros spent by the outgoing government in effectively relieving people's energy bills. People's energy bills have not gone down dramatically. And if any of us are familiar with their energy bills, they have not gone down dramatically. So notwithstanding what Barry is saying about general inflation, when you look at energy bills themselves, they have not gone down significantly, if at all. And the critical point here is the government has squandered money, right, over the past 3 years to try and buy votes, now is in a situation saying, well, we can't fork out anything more. And a bit like third level fees as well. They're effectively, people had an expectation that there was going to be a reduction in the fee this year. And of course, that's now not going to happen. So the critical issue here, to my mind, is what are the permanent reductions in the cost of living? And this has to be part of the conversation here, because the reality is the economic conditions are changing. We don't know when exactly they're going to change, because tax revenues are still really buoyant. But what are we doing to permanently reduce people's cost of living? And to my mind, we need to have a much greater retrofitting programme. So we see the retrofitting grant is not working at all. We need to have a street by street retrofitting programme where you put solar panels.
Which is one of the measures in John Cummins' proposals,
but it's
actually.
It's not happening.
Let me bring in Christina Finn here. Which argument do you think is being won inside government? The fiscal rectitude argument, or we've got to do something for people on cost of living in the budget?
I think government will be extremely cautious heading towards this budget, and that will be at the cost of people at home who are struggling. Because I think the narrative when we're talking about inflation, when it went up and then it fell back again, politicians were always saying, oh, look, we've got inflation down, you know. But the point is that the high costs have still remained. So the messaging around why we brought cost of living measures in the first place and why we had to act urgently to do that, that hasn't gone away. People are still struggling. As Marie said, those energy bills are still extremely high. And I don't think people at home would mind too much if the costs, the credits were removed, if they were explained that over the last 3 years, the government had done a body of work into the energy sector, into the energy companies, got behind the figures and checked as to why people are paying such high energy costs. Because Ireland is paying, I think, third highest in energy bills in Europe. So I think people at home would have expected the government to do a body of work to look at why that is the case, how that can be fixed over 3 year period when they were giving out these credits, to treat the symptoms of it. Because at the moment, it just feels like the rug has been pulled under people. And the issue as to why, a question mark over why energy companies in Ireland feel that they can charge such high amounts for electricity and gas, that hasn't been explained to people as to why that is happening.
Tabitha, what do you think they're going to do? Are they going to tough it out, or are they going to try and buy back a little bit of that pre-election popularity?
Oh, I think they'll tough it out. I think they'll tough it out. I think, like Barry said, there will be some measures in place there, but the credits not being there is going to be a massive loss. And Christine is saying, you know, that the energy prices are still quite high. Everything else is also still quite high. We're seeing the CSO saying there was, I think, was it a 4.7% increase in the price of groceries year on year. That's what people, I think, and what the argument Lynn Boylan was making earlier on in the week when she said that there was 300,000 people in arrears on their electricity bills, that people are now being forced to choose between paying for groceries or paying for electricity. Now, we don't know to what extent how bad that situation is, whether or not most of those people are just 1 month in arrears or if they're multiple months in arrears. So we don't know the seriousness. I think 300,000 people and a record number of people being in arrears is an issue. But it's, and we also had Bernardo's, I think, earlier in the week also saying that they are starting to see families making those difficult choices. But I think, again, we have to take the context of this situation. We have this 15% tariff ceiling that has been introduced, that deal between the US and the EU. That's going to have a serious impact on the economy. economy. We don't know sector by sector what kind of impact that's going to have, but I think they'll have, the government will have to tough it out.
And when I talk to Vincent DePaul and other organisations around, they're telling me they've never seen things so bad.
Measures, the permanent measures the government needs to put in place. You can go through a whole list of things the government has done, and to use to suggest that there isn't a support for people, talk about families, talk about extending the 9% VAT rate on gas and electricity, talking about expanding massively the provisions for fuel allowances, particularly to encompass people on fixed incomes like pensioners. There are loads of supports there. But they need to continue, and they will be
actually moving to renewables.
No, what you said was the government
households
needs to put in place permanent measures to support people. That is exactly what we're doing.
Exactly. So actually reduce their energy consumption.
Temporary fuel allowance. That's what you're talking about.
You haven't done anything to reduce people's energy consumption. That's the critical point
here. SEIA has rolled out an enormous programme of retrofitting houses, increasing provisions for insulation houses,
solar panels, provision of energy efficiency. The reality is it's the most comfortable out there that are able to afford retrofitting, not those who are most badly off.
You speak to some of your constituents, therefore things are not happening. The figures are there to reflect, and in fact the very measures that you're attacking from John Cummins, for example, includes removing the requirement for planning permission to wrap houses.
I would like to move on to tariffs and the statement from your party leader, Barry Ward, at the beginning of the week, well, at least this now brings us some certainty. At this end of the week, does that look like a bit of a miscalculation?
Not at all. I think the most important thing about the deal that was done between the European Commission and the United States is the certainty. And I'm sure all of us have spoken to companies that are contemplating investment measures in Ireland, have been delaying that because they don't know what the landscape is going to be like for trade. Now they have that certainty. Is it a good thing that tariffs are in place? Absolutely not. We're all opposed to tariffs. Tariffs are bad for everyone. Donald Trump doesn't understand that, but the European Commission does. So the best thing that we can do in the circumstances is to have a situation where we have certainty. The other thing to remember is...
Well, no, hang on, let's just leave it at that and let Christina pick up on it, please. Do you think that anybody making a prediction of certainty is doing so with any evidence to support it right now?
I think everyone is kind of navigating things in the dark right now. I think it's very hard for businesses and even people in government to know what way Donald Trump is going to go on things. The deadlines are being moved, things are being pushed out. And I think there is kind of trying to put an air of optimism perhaps on this 15% certainty. I think it's good that people perhaps know that that's where we've landed, but I don't think the implications for that have really been felt. We have Simon Harris having a trade forum meeting today talking about this new diversification action plan. For me, I'm kind of like, you know, should we not have had a diversification action plan? Were we sitting on our laurels too much with the US trade and our over-reliance on it? We have a huge push from government. I think nearly every minister is heading off to Japan this year to try and boost trade there. We have another massive trade mission going over to Canada with the Taoiseach in October. So there does feel to be a bit of a panic station around things and trying to get money in wherever we can.
Does it also feel to you, Tabitha Monaghan, like it might be something of a major turning point? Gerard Howland writing in the Irish Times this morning about how so many of the underlying political assumptions about how Ireland relates to Europe, about how Europe relates to the rest of the world, have fundamentally changed in the last couple of months.
Yeah, and also that I think what it's also flagged is that over-reliance on the US market and the Irish economy as well. And just going back to that kind of stability and whether or not we have that certainty anymore, particularly in pharma, and I think that was the one thing that the government, both pharma but also semiconductors, but particularly pharma, where is that going to land? We have that Section 232 investigation still to play out. That could run into January. That could very well give Donald Trump the opportunity to increase that tariff.
Thank you very much, Tabitha Monaghan, Christina Finn, Marie Sherlock and Barry Ward. I've got to take my final ad break here.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.